This is the Online Learning Podcast, Influencer Interview, episode number 83. Welcome to the Online Learning Podcast, Influencer Interview, bringing you amazing people who have done amazing things to be your virtual mentors in your online learning experience. And now, your host, John Colley. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Online Learning Podcast Influencer Interview. It's great to have you with me today. My name is John Colley. I'm your host. And in today's interview, I've got two guests, Michael Kolonik and John Sortino, and together they are the founders of the Cambridge Entrepreneur Academy. Now, anybody who listens to this podcast knows that I'm passionate about online learning, and the Cambridge Entrepreneur Academy is a worldwide online entrepreneur training academy. And I was really interested to learn more about this. I was introduced to Michael by my good friend Tim Forrest, who said Michael and John were doing some very interesting things and I should definitely find out more. So I got Michael onto a call, and Michael then got John on the call as well, and we did this interview. So we go through their story, and you'll understand that they've got both fantastic experience, albeit coming from completely different directions. And I hope there's some really valuable nuggets of gold in this that you can take away and apply yourselves. So let's dive in, and it's my great pleasure to introduce you to Michael Connolly and John Sortino. Today, I'm delighted to welcome two guests to the Influencer Interview on the Online Learning Podcast. The first is Michael Connolly, and the second is John Sortino, and they together run the Cambridge Entrepreneur Academy, about which I hope we're going to learn a lot today. John and Michael, a very warm welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Can we start perhaps by just asking you to individually introduce yourselves? And I know you've both got very interesting backstories. So a little bit about your history and how you've come to be where you are now.
Sure. About 3 years ago, I started going in the direction of e-learning. I put a course online. My previous life, I've written a book called How to Be a Successful Entrepreneur, which did very well. But my real claim to fame was starting a company called the Vermont Teddy Bear Company. I took the company public. I started it in Burlington, Vermont, which is a very northern state in the United States, borders Canada, 60 miles from Montreal. And in Burlington, I would make and sell my own teddy bears with an outdoor peddler's cart. And I took that peddler's cart business to becoming one of the best brand names in the United States. We advertised on all of the radio stations in the United States. I'm not saying all of them, but, you know, all the markets. And took the company public, did very well with it. So it started as a teddy bear business. In my first year, I sold $200 worth of teddy bears. The year we went public, I took it to a market cap of $100 million. 3 years ago, I started Cambridge Entrepreneur Academy. I wanted to go after teaching children about entrepreneurship. But along the way, I've known Mike for 5 years. And Mike said, you know, the children that would be most interested in entrepreneurship are entrepreneurs themselves or adults who want to do it. So we're focusing on adults who want to be entrepreneurs. And I would like to see entrepreneurship taught as early as eight-year-old. That's when I started learning about being an entrepreneur, when I was eight. I didn't know what it meant, but I knew how to make money when I was 8 years old. And Mike and I met 5 years ago when Mike and I talked about this business a little bit. Mike said, let's go after adults. He knew a lot of adults. He's an expert in social media. And we kicked it off together about 6 months ago. Mike is very influential in the success of our business. And I love working with Mike because of his energy. And he learned about me a long time ago. And that's kind of how we got to know each other. So, Mike, do you want to tell a little bit about how we got to know each other?
Yeah, so I started a company about 7 years ago with my wife called Stinky Cakes. And, well, I fell in love with entrepreneurship at the age of 5, and I started my first company when I was 9. But during that time when I was falling in love with entrepreneurship, I was reading a lot of entrepreneurial publications, like, you know, Entrepreneur Magazine and Inc. Magazine, and those Forbes and those kind of things. Excuse me. And so I have this Mount Rushmore of entrepreneurship, I like to say. And on it is Mike Kittredge, the guy who started the Yankee Candle Company, Dave Klein, the guy who started the Jelly Belly Company, Famous Amos, Wally Amos from Famous Amos Cookies, the Ben and Jerry's guys, and then is John Certino. John started the Vermont Teddy Bear Company, like you said. So I always knew John grew that company with radio. So when I wanted to grow my company using radio, I actually reached out to John. I mean, I did tons and tons of research trying to track this guy down. And I actually bought his book. And after I bought the book, I was like, I have to talk to this guy because I know the stuff that's not in the book that I need to know. So I did a whole bunch of research, and I ended up getting some contact info from him. I sent him out a message, and he said, "Yeah, why don't you come out to meet me in Cambridge?" And I was like, "What? Okay." I didn't know this was like a serial killer trying to trap me. I didn't know anything. But I said, "You know what? If this is worth it, so I'm gonna go out and meet him." And then when I went out to meet him, it was actually John. And we hit it off right away, and I kid you not, within 15 minutes, this guy, I mean, he told me exactly why I was losing money in radio and what I should be doing to make money in radio. And I applied his stuff, and I really look up to John. He's a brilliant business mind. Like, I mean, even now in our meetings with Cambridge Entrepreneur Academy, the stuff that I'm learning about entrepreneurship from John is like mind blowing. And you couldn't tell me that I didn't know a lot about entrepreneurship, but what John is really great at doing is simplifying these complex thoughts about business and entrepreneurship. And you go, you know what? That makes sense. And I know how I could apply it to myself. So it's been absolutely brilliant. And like John said, we started off, you know, with the idea, you know, helping kids be entrepreneurs. But then, you know, we had the thought that entrepreneurial adults will have entrepreneurial kids. The reason I think of that is because my sons, I have a son, 7 and 8, and they don't think job. They think make money. And it's because they watch me make money, and they look at me doing stuff on the internet, and they go, "Well, Dad, I don't even want to go to school. I want to stay home and make money online." I go, "No, you got to learn to read and write first." but they see it and they want to do it. So that's why we have that in the academy. We have that you know, how to teach kids to be entrepreneurs course, because once kids get it, you know, there's nothing wrong with working or having a job. I'm not saying that, but I think every person should have that option, whether they want to work for themselves or whether they want to work for someone else. And, you know, a lot of people don't have the option. They go to jobs that they can't stand, but they're really passionate about these things and have really great ideas, but have no idea what to do with them. So we help people from, you know, that need to come up with an idea that is all the way ready to go public with an idea, because that's a whole other thing. And that requires doing that with someone that did it before. You can't just pick up and go take your company public. You need to know how to do it. And then John's great at that. So I like to say we go from idea to IPO at the academy. Like literally we customize, you know, a path for our entrepreneurs, because no two entrepreneurs are alike. I mean, just like no two women are alike, or no two men are alike. Like, there's no two entrepreneurs that are alike. You could put, you look at Mark Zuckerberg and you look at Bill Gates. I mean, even though they're both in tech space, they're completely different. Like, it's just what it is. But we're able to work with all types of entrepreneurs, because between John, myself, and we've been through just about every scenario that an entrepreneur can go through.
John, can I pick up this radio advertising point? Because I think it's very interesting that you were so successful. It wouldn't have occurred to me that you could grow a teddy bear company through radio advertising. And then when you've dealt with that, Michael, can you, with your social media knowledge, perhaps address the issue as can you transfer that radio expertise now to the podcast arena? Because the two formats are audio, and they are providing an audio product for a listener. But I'm hoping you're going to tell me they're very different, John.
Sure. I started out making teddy bears because the word teddy bear, the very first teddy bear was made in 1903 in the United States, and it quickly became one of the best selling toys by 1906. And it was named after President of the United States, Theodore Roosevelt, the teddy bear. And I know Britain's been making teddy bears probably longer than we've been making teddy bears, but the fact of called the teddy bear, to me, meant that other people meant Steiff might have been making bears, but no one called it a teddy bear until 1903. And when I started making them, I thought of them as a toy. I wanted to make a toy, something similar to Willy Wonka making chocolate. And if you go online and Google the Vermont Teddy Bear Company, you could see this beautiful factory that I built in Vermont where 250,000 people a year visit it. It's the second largest tourist attraction in the state of Vermont. And you could go in there and watch bears being made. And you really can't go anywhere in the United States to watch bears being made. How I got there because around I was selling my bears to retail outlets, you know, the largest retail outlets in the United States, and really doing poorly at it. And in 1989, one thing that our board of directors said, John, it seems like the retail outlets aren't really working, but the one thing that you have working is something that you developed earlier on called a beargram. And a beargram is something where you, like, for instance, for Valentine's Day, you would send out a love bear to your lover or your daughter or your mother or something like that, or Mother's Day or for birthdays. And I turned a teddy bear toy into a teddy bear gift. So I competed with flowers, jewelry, and other kinds of gifts that people could buy. So I changed my thought from joining the toy business to getting into the gift business. Once I got into the gift, and the reason why the beargram thing worked is because I advertised on a radio station, a small radio station in Burlington, Vermont. And every Valentine's Day, I would do very well on Valentine's Day. And the board of directors said, let's take some money and put it on New York radio. At the time, the largest station in the United States was Z100 in New York City. We advertised the very first ad we did on that radio station. Our phones didn't stop ringing for half an hour. So when you said the difference between podcast and radio, it's to me, it's completely different. Because when a radio ad goes off, you're not competing with all the other stuff that's on the internet. You're just, you know, somebody might be driving in their car and they hear your message, so they can't get away from it unless they switch the station. In my case, I learned how to advertise. So there's a lot to radio advertising and how your ad's placed. We have a radio ad course in our academy, of which some pretty amazing companies have taken the course and learned a lot from it. I spent $15 million on radio advertising. I consider myself to be one of the best, most knowledgeable radio advertisers. And I don't do it the traditional way. John, as I was saying to you before we started this podcast, I advertised in Great Britain and for Valentine's Day in 1990, the mid-90s, maybe 95, 96 or something like that, and did very well. We shipped our bears from the United States to Scotland, Edinburgh, and then we shipped out of Edinburgh to all over Great Britain. And the test proved really well. And right around that same time, things changed a little bit in the company. We decided to go in a slightly different direction. But radio advertising around the world works very well. And I could tell you that there are countries like your country where there are, because of the BBC, you don't have that many radio stations to listen to. Here in the United States, we have, you know, just in Boston alone, there's probably almost as many radio stations as there are in the whole in our country of Great Britain, most certainly in New York City. And it's a very targeted media, meaning that when you advertise on a radio station, if it's like Capital Radio, which plays your popular songs in London, most of the people that are listening to that station are people that are interested in music. They're interested in what's going on in London. There's talking going on. It's a creative station. You also have a country station which plays country music. You have I think you still have a news station there. So each type of person that listens to those kind of stations, you could target your ad to exactly who those listeners are, which makes radio, to me, one of the most amazing places to go, especially if you want to advertise your product. What I did with the Teddy Bear Company was I advertised an 800 number, and people called up. Now, and I actually had one of the very first websites also in the early 90s. So it's done very well. We're about a $50 million company now.
Amazing. Now, it's a very interesting thought. I mean, I don't know much about, I know next to nothing about radio and certainly radio advertising. I have been podcasting for sort of 2 or 3 years now. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and there are quite a lot of podcasts that take sponsorship. And so obviously those companies think that it's working. Mike, what's your view on you know, the power of podcasting in terms of reaching an audience? And do you think it has any potential in the same way that radio advertising does?
Yeah, see, what I think about a podcast is that you really have the power of pushing out the content, and it's almost like residual content. So like John said, his phone would ring for about half an hour with the radio, and that's because that particular his ad, or however he did it, was in that particular time frame. With a podcast mixed with social media, the time frame really doesn't end. So you could have waves of people coming onto your podcast, powered by social media. So so that's the great thing about it. The time frame doesn't end. It's like, for example, on our website, in the last 2 months, we had over 600,000 people on our website, right? And it's all based on viral content. And the beauty of it, it works because we can constantly push that content out. Like, once you understand, it goes back to basic marketing skills. Once you understand your target market and that actual message and what makes your brand unique, and you put that in front of people that would appreciate that, it does not end. So when we did the campaigns that made our company go viral, for most people it would seem like it was, you know, accidental or we got lucky. But John and I, we spent about 3 to 4 weeks crafting a message to put out to a specific audience. And once we had that message right, we positioned our message in front of the people that would want it. And now it's like this residual effect. Like, you just get thousands and thousands of people onto your website. And it could be the same thing for a podcast. Like, once you, because you tell the people where to go and you give the people what they want, and then you get the result that you want. So it goes back to basic, basic but more advanced marketing techniques as well, because you have to, like John said, like, it was funny because John and I were having a conversation a few months back, and I said, John, you know, you're really brilliant when it comes to this marketing thing. I wish I could be on more like you on the thinking ability. And he says, no, Mike, you're exactly like me. The difference is I had a $15 million education. I spent $15 million advertising. So I really could. I had to find out what works real fast. I didn't want to waste my money. And I go, holy crap, it makes sense. So when you know exactly what works, you won't ever do something that won't work. And a lot of entrepreneurs and marketers don't know what works, you know. So a lot of them end up messing up and end up spending a lot of money or wasting money on things that don't work. And then what happens with that is they get burnt out either mentally, physically, or emotionally. But when you know what things to do, it's really fun. Like, it's you know, most people don't get 600,000-700,000 people on their website ever, much less in 2 months. But when you know how to do certain things, like when you know how to do it, it works. And basically, we took the same stuff that work on radio for John, and we took the same stuff that work in social media for me, and we apply it to our business. And that's one of the things that we teach people in the academy, like how to do the right things. And you know, some people hear the things that we say and they go, well, what? I never heard that before. And I said, exactly, because you're not going to hear it because no one's teaching it. 95% of all businesses fail. So when you're hearing everybody saying the same thing, you want to run away because chances are that's not the accurate information. You want to get that 5% information, like I like to call it. And when you sit down with people that succeeded at entrepreneurship, they all speak in the same language. It's like you could always jump right in and with that conversation, and they won't have anything to do with that 95% information.
I think you've raised a very interesting point, which is that any business needs to be able to identify who its market is and then work out how to reach them. So perhaps you can just talk me through a little bit about what you did, you know, for the academy, in terms of the steps you took to identify that audience, and then some of the things that you did right that people can learn from in order to reach them.
So if you think about it, I mean, for John and I, it's simple. And why did I say it's simple? Because we've been working with entrepreneurs or teaching entrepreneurs combined for over 30-something years. So, like, it's really kind of easy to identify, what like, our type. If you were, like, dating, you know your type, right? So you know who you're going after. So our target market is almost like our type of people that we know would be interested in things that we have to offer. So, like, on my social media pages, like, I could post a post about business, and I have close to 2,000 friends on Facebook. And if I started my Facebook again, all 2,000 of my friends would be my target audience, not my friends, to be honest with you. But that's a whole nother story. But now when I post stuff on social media, I already know who's going to respond to certain things. And I know from the people that are going to respond who are actually going to become a member in my academy, because it's so predictable. Like you literally, with social media, you get incredible data. Like, it's like social media is a marketer's dream, because you get to study your target market. You get to test messages. You get to do a lot of different things, and then you see what works. And then you take the things that you know that is working, and then you put that into a campaign to go after those certain type people. So people look at my Facebook and they go, "Well, you don't even get that many likes." I said, "Listen, I know I don't want likes. I'm not going for likes. I'm going for sales. You can keep your like." And there's people on social media with thousands and thousands of likes making no money. I want the opposite direction. I want thousands and thousands of dollars in little likes.
I think you're absolutely right. Better to have 1,000 true friends, as I think Seth Godin says. But can you give me some specific examples about you know, which platforms are working for you, and one or two things? I don't obviously give away the shop, but just to give people some things they can latch onto about, you know, things that worked.
Sure. What Mike and I worked out together is, I'm a strong believer in, first of all, building your website and your message around keywords. So we went on Google AdWords, and we found which keywords we wanted to go after. And they're kind of the most expensive ones. Once we discovered those keywords that everybody was going after, we then put those keywords in our ad campaign. So we find... And Mike, this is where Mike's great. Mike finds something similar that he could take viral with our keywords in it, and people click on our keywords. It's pretty. Mike, am I saying that correctly?
No, you nailed it. So that's why I said it goes back to basic marketing and then advanced marketing. So the basic marketing would be finding keywords. Anyone can do that, right? And then advanced marketing would be making that thing go viral. And that goes back to using platforms like Twitter, like Facebook, like Instagram, like LinkedIn, like Pinterest, like Reddit. Using all of these things, but it goes back to that marketing message. It's almost like this: if you go fishing and you have the right bait for the right fish, it's just a matter of putting that bait in the water where the fish is.
Right. I do think that a lot of people, entrepreneurs in particular, don't spend enough time on keywords. In the market of today, keyword is the most important part of any business. And that's kind of what you're focusing your energy in. So when you talk about our audience, that's what we go after, those two keywords, three keywords, four keywords. And John, just to say one thing to make it clear, the difference between podcasts and radio advertising, podcasts to me are something that Mike and I both use. We use it to inform our members and to inform people who want to become members. Radio advertising we use to get to educate people, the general public, on who we are and what we're doing.
Yeah, I can see that difference. And actually, I asked the question because I wanted you to try to, sure, to help and educate my understanding of it. Can we talk a little bit more about the academy? Because I'm intrigued to understand what you're offering and what you're trying to cover, because you've both got, if I may say so, very different backgrounds, and I think that's a huge strength. So what's the scope? If I'm coming to the academy as a potential member, you know, what am I going to find, and how are you going to deliver it to me?
Well, the first thing that we do is when a member comes in, we schedule a one-on-one, and that's between half an hour or an hour discussion with Mike, myself, or both of us. And a lot of times it's half an hour. And we talk about where that member, now paying member, where they are, where their head's at, what they want to do, what their goals are. If they don't have goals, what they're thinking about, a lot of people come to us and go, you know, oh, this is what I want to do. They already know what they want to do. Some people come to us and go, I really have all these ideas out there. So some people come to us and say, I've already got a very successful business. I want to learn how to do radio advertising. Some people come to us and say, okay, how do I organize this company into an asset so I can eventually form an exit strategy for it? And it could be any level of those kinds of things. So we got to figure out where the person that joined our member, where their head's at. And with that first one-on-one, we do a lot of one-on-ones with our members. And that's what I think makes us uniquely different. The very first thing that we do is Mike and I developed a course called the 4-Point Triangle. And when you go to Cambridge Entrepreneur Academy, you'll see our logo's got this triangle. It's four triangles. And John, I know you're very knowledgeable on business. And I think you would agree with me when I say this, that every business is pretty much organized the same way, especially a corporation. And we try to get our members to think like corporations, even if they're not, which is a board of directors at the top, which I don't include in the 4-point triangle. But underneath that is the CEO, CFO, CMO, and COO. And every first member takes that course. And so when they talk to us on our one-on-ones, I say to them, who are you today? Which one of those four pieces in the triangle? And that's kind of how we develop our courses and our learning structure for each individual member. We go at their pace. So something you want to add to that, Mike?
No, I think you nailed it. And the best part of that 4-point triangle course, which is actually one of my favorite courses in the academy, is that almost everyone goes, wow, I never really thought about that. And then they start to realize like their strengths and their weaknesses. And the second you understand your strengths, you can maximize that. And then you realize the areas that you're weak in, and you find someone that loves doing that thing that you love working with. And now your business almost automatically becomes stronger. So the things that I feel like the 4-point triangle is the cure to entrepreneurial burnout, because you're not trying to do everything. You really learn how to build a team.
But yeah, that's true.
You cover the whole of the, I mean, I often look in business in terms of a life cycle, and you've already touched on it from the start of the idea through to the IPO. And actually, you know, it can obviously go on beyond the IPO. But how do you address the life cycle aspect of where your members are? Because it's very different to have a guy who's shaping a business for an IPO and a guy who's got a brilliant idea but doesn't quite know how to put it into action.
Well, I think the most of our members don't even think IPO or don't think of exit strategy. I would say 80% of them haven't even thought of the word exit strategy. An exit strategy could be an IPO. It could be selling your company to another business. It could be a number of different things. But most of our members, I would say half of the members have a good idea, but they don't really think about the idea and how to organize that idea into a company that you could build an asset out of that idea. So we pretty much, if a person's got this idea and says, I want to be an internet marketing person, we'll say, well, you know, you could work on that for 5 years, but if you're selling somebody else's product at the end of 5 years, you're going to build something that's not worth anything. But if you build something, build a brand, then after 5 years, you got an asset that's worth some money to somebody. So we start right there with the idea. We build a plan out for that person, 3-year plan, which, you know, is commonly referred to as a cash flow statement for 3 years. And at the end of 3 years, the person could see the value in that company, because they'll know what it takes for each one of those four areas that we talked about earlier, and develop a formula on building that company forward. So if you got an idea, in order to make that idea work, it's going to end up becoming a formula on how you spend your money. You're going to spend a certain amount of money in marketing and sales. You're going to spend a certain amount of money in operations. You're going to spend a certain amount of money on finance. And you're going to spend a certain amount of money in administration. So that's pretty much what we do with all of our members. And once they see that, one of my favorite member stories is, in fact, we're meeting with him later on today. He's going to university, and he started out taking What do you take, like, business or entrepreneurship or something?
Entrepreneurship. You got to try to get a degree in entrepreneurial thinking or something like that.
He joined our academy and dropped that immediately because he goes, I learned more from you guys in 2 weeks than I did in college for the whole time I've been here. And he changed his degree to finance because he realized he was really weak in it. He knew the operations of his business. And I don't think he'd mind me saying what his business is, but he's good at tearing down buildings and selling the parts of that building to scrap places like, you know, copper, bricks, and things like that, all the stuff that's in that building. And he's done a number of huge projects, but he didn't know how to put the thing together. And he took the four-point triangle course, and now we built a program for him so that he can actually have a path to where he wants to be in 3 years. And it's very exciting. We have people who also, a number of our members like baking when they're in the food business. And it's kind of fun because people go, well, you know, I want to do this. I really like baking. We try to find out what people like to do. We try to direct our members into what their passion is, not necessarily what they've been doing before. Some people say, well, you know, I've done this. This is the kind of job I've had. And we'll say to them, but what do you really want to do? And they go, well, I'd really like to bake, or I'd really like to do this. When I started my teddy bear business, I really liked making things. I really liked going to fabric shops and sewing. I'm actually a pretty good sewer. And I really liked the manufacturing process, and that's why I did that business. I'm in love with manufacturing. So we try to drag out what the person really is passionate about, and then we try to build a business around their passion. So it's a broad gamut of all of our members. Sometimes a member just wants to do some better in marketing and sales, so we just focus on that. Wherever they are in their thinking is where we want to be. Right. And between Mike and I, we really can pretty much, we have 15 levels of entrepreneurship, everything from an idea phase all the way to the exit strategy. So that's kind of what we work with.
Now, I think it's really inspirational. Before we wrap up, and I particularly want to make sure that people know where they can go and find the Academy, can I just challenge you to give one piece of advice? If there was one thing you'd say to me as somebody who's approached you as possibly becoming a member, one thing that I should go and do today to try and make a difference in my business. This is a bit of a wide question. It's straight out the blue. So I'm trying to talk a little bit to give you a chance to think about an answer, but perhaps,
I have the answer already. Yeah. Mike might have a different answer.
I'd love to hear what it is.
We do this with all of our members. When they have an idea, we say, go out. No idea is a new idea. And people think like they have to come up with this new idea and make this idea better. That's the wrong way of thinking because someone else has already had your idea. I don't care what it is. I mean, and two major universities are here, Harvard and MIT. And MIT is continually putting out new technology and new drugs or whatever that they're putting out. But they're pretty much the same kind of ideas. And somebody kind of have done that idea before. So we say to everyone, that whatever their idea is or whatever their passion is or whatever their business is, imitate what somebody else has done. Research as much as you can of what somebody else has done before you and take what you think is good about that business and improve the parts that you think is not good about that business. And we ask our members to research what they're interested in a lot. So researching what somebody else has done. I call it copying, which is really imitating, but that's what entrepreneurs do. They really kind of look, see what somebody else has done, and then just do it a little bit better, a little bit. A good example of this would be in Boston, where I live, in Cambridge, there's a lot of places where you get pizza delivery. But in some places, most places in the United States, you can't get pizza delivery. So if you could figure out how to deliver pizza to most of the places in the United States, you'd make a bundle. So, you know, you might not make the best pizza in the world, but most certainly if you can get it to people, like in Vermont where it's mostly agricultural, those people want pizza delivered at night just like they want it in Boston. I think drones might help there. I don't know.
No, that's really good. Mike, what would you say to somebody?
Yeah, so I always like to say, you know, just start.
Right.
See, so many people are afraid to fail, and failing's not a bad thing because when you fail, if you know, the faster you get up, you just learn a whole bunch of lessons. So you just want to turn around and learn from what you just did. Because if you fail one time and you try to do the thing again, you're not going to do the things that made you fail. So like John was saying, sometimes like every idea has already been done. Like even when I started my company Stinky Cakes with my wife, we really thought we had a brand new thought. Like, man, we got to make diaper giving fun. And then we looked and it was already done. So we said, you know what? We just really, because like Apple didn't invent the phone. They invented the iPhone. They made it really, really cool. So when you look at all you, as far as imitation go, you look at birds, right? There was a bird and now we have airplanes. All the airplane is a mechanical bird. So ideas are literally everywhere. So when you start, just start, just go. And you always want to have a trusted advisor and trusted mentors that been through the fire already. You know, I like to say, a guy that's making $50,000 can't teach a guy how to make $60,000, because if you know how to make $60,000, he'd be making $60,000. And when you look at the things that John and I has done collectively, man, we've really been through it. And you don't really find too many people that really want to talk one-on-one with entrepreneurs, teaching them, because it's a you know, getting someone to understand the real entrepreneurial mindset is a challenge in itself. But that's a challenge that John and I both love, because we're both excited and enthused about entrepreneurs and helping people grow through that business. So that'll be the two things: just start. And then find trusted mentors that been through the fire, so you could avert as much failure as possible, and just learn and have a good time doing it.
Yeah, you're
Mike, I think also, Mike, that what Mike also likes to, with when we have meetings with our members, is we make our member identify where they fit in that 4-point triangle, what their strengths are. That's very important.
Yeah.
Some people are good at finance. Some people are good at operations. Some people are good at sales and marketing. And if you, once you define, and you're going to be the boss, okay? All of our members assume are the boss. So we ask them where they fit in that 3-point triangle, and then go out and recruit other people. Try to sell your idea and to two other people to fit in, to build your triangle together, so you got a strong business. That's what we focus in on. And if you can't sell your idea to somebody who wants to work with you, then you might not have a good idea.
Right. That's critical. If you can't give your idea away for free, stop.
I think that's the very inspiration, and actually your passion for entrepreneurship comes through absolutely loud and clear. I'm sure anybody listening to this conversation will want to know where they can find out more about the Academy. So where should I send them to?
They can go to www.CambridgeEntrepreneurAcademy.com, and they actually could find us on social media as well, Facebook and all that good stuff, Cambridge Entrepreneur Academy.
Brilliant. I'll make sure there are links in the show notes to that. Mike, perhaps you can just send me the links. So I know I've got the website, but if you could send me through the other links after the show, that would be great. Gentlemen, it's been fascinating talking to you, particularly with your extensive experience. And I'm very passionate and enthusiastic about entrepreneurship as well. So to meet two common souls like that has been great fun. I've really enjoyed talking to you. I'm sure everybody listening to this podcast has learned a lot from you. And I thank you very much for your time and for being such great guests on the Online Learning Podcast.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So my thanks to John and to Michael for that fascinating interview. I think it's incredible what they're doing, and it just goes to show the power of teaching online. So I take my hat off to them, and I'm sure it's going to be a huge success. If you want to access the show notes, by the way, as usual, they are on my website, jbdcolley.com/OLPII. This is an influencer interview edition, OLPII 083, and you'll have all the links and everything on those show notes. Before we go, I'd like to give a shout out to Catherine from changeability.me, who's very kindly left a very nice 5-star review on iTunes. She says, highly recommended. Excellent podcast for anyone wanting to learn more about online learning, whether as a learner, teacher, or potential tutor. The interviews are inspiring, and John has a great manner. Thanks, John, for all this fabulous information. We'll definitely be highly recommending this show. Well, Catherine, thank you indeed for that fantastic comment and for the 5-star review. And don't forget, if you are on iTunes or listening on Stitcher or anywhere else where you can leave a review and a comment, it really helps the show to be found, and I love reading them out. And I actually really love and really appreciate the comments that you give me. So that's it for this week. I hope you've enjoyed the show. I hope you've enjoyed the very stimulating discussion with Michael and with John. And I look forward to seeing you again very soon in another edition of the Online Learning Podcast. We hope you enjoyed that Online Learning Podcast influencer interview. If you did, please leave us a review and a rating in iTunes. It really helps. And do tell a friend. We look forward to seeing you in another edition of the Online Learning Podcast very soon.